What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. My name is Joe Orico, and you guys can find me on Twitter at JoeOrico99. We're welcoming on a special guest today. He has appeared on the show before. This is our first recurring guest. We finally got somebody to come back on. It is Ryan Bloomfield. You guys know him from his work with Baseball HQ. Of course, he works on the Baseball Forecaster. He was the 2020 FSWA Writer of the Year. And of course, like I said, you guys can find his work on Twitter and at baseballhq.com. Ryan, thank you for joining me again here, man. I appreciate you coming back on.
Absolutely, Joe. You didn't scare me away too much the first time a couple months ago, but happy to be, I think the first guest and the first repeat guest. So it's been cool to see you take this show back from when I first came on to where it is now and the guests you've had on and all that stuff. So yeah, great to be back with you.
Yeah, it was. You were on, I believe, the day before the season started, and we talked about some predictions. Some of them have gone pretty well. Some of them not so well. We were both pretty big on Luke Voit, who I know someone you wanted to cover today. A couple other guys, I think we talked about Tyler McGill, who just had an unfortunate run this year. I think Alex Wood, we also talked about, who's also just had some unfortunate luck. So we missed, but we also had some bad luck like those guys did along the way as well, for sure.
Well, the key is, and I probably should go back and listen to that episode. That would be kind of cool. I forgot it was right before opening day, and I do remember the Tyler McGill love. But yeah, the key is it's bad luck if your calls don't work out, and it's always your fault when they do work out. That's the rules of the game here, man.
So why don't we start off with, why don't we go back to Luke Voit? He's someone that you had mentioned earlier in the year, and you said you wanted to talk about him a little bit today as well. The topic of today's show is going to be second half turnaround. So you believe that there is some light at the end of the tunnel here with Luke Voit?
I do. I guess I'm a little stubborn, but it's also kind of sticking to your process and sticking with a lot of the kind of preseason draft prep that you did. When you're looking at, you know, multiple years of a sample size, you tend to get not attached to these players, but the analysis that you did for a lot of these guys in March still, I think, in my opinion, holds in July here. In Voit's case specifically, like, just, you know, his first half was pretty much, or at least the first month or two of his season was pretty much torpedoed by an IL stint, a biceps injury. And the interesting thing about Luke Voit is since he came back, so he came back around mid-May from that injury, kind of worked his way back. But since June 1st, Luke Voit is on a list with Kyle Schwarber, Aaron Judge, J-Rod, Otani. Luke Voit is number 5 in Major League Baseball since June 1st in barrels. And overall barrel. So the power is absolutely there. I know the strikeout rate is up a little bit, but I think a lot of that, again, just injury related, and Luke Voit is kind of getting healthy at the right time with this recent power surge. I mean, this is a guy who led all of baseball in 2020. I know it was with the Yankees, but led all of baseball in home runs. If you're talking about, you know, that buy low or that bounce back type of guy for a half season, Luke Voit has shown he can be elite, at least in the power department for a half season. I can see that happening again now that the bicep injury is behind him and he's fully healthy in a really good lineup with San Diego.
Yeah, he's also one other thing. He's got the walk rate back up. Excuse me. He's got the walk rate back up to where he had it around 2018, his first couple of seasons. It's up to close to 12% over the last couple of years, 7-8%. So he's getting on base a little bit more. Like you said, he's showing a lot of power and he's a good buy low. I think a lot of guys we're going to talk about today are going to be in that buy low department. You guys that you can capitalize on around the All-Star break. I think there's some people who are starting to transition a little bit more into the football season and paying a little bit less attention to baseball. So you might be able to capitalize on some people paying less attention and also on some good performances here.
And that's where you can, and I do this, I do baseball year round. So this is my thing. This is where you can really start to kind of get that edge, and everyone's starting to turn. It seems to go early and earlier with football. But this is where, especially these kind of recent hot streaks and that sort of thing on the trade market is really useful. But then also, again, just kind of grinding away at fab second half when others are not.
Are most of the leagues that you play in no trade leagues, mostly just NFBC stuff, or?
Most, it's about half and half. I play a lot of NFBC, which is obviously no trade, but Labor Tout Wars are all trades leagues. My home league is a trade league as well. So a little bit mixture of both. And I kind of, I don't know, I go back and forth. Like trading is, it can be a, can be fun. It can be a massive waste of time. It can also be like in Tout Wars where it's an AL only like 12 team league. It can be your only way to really reshuffle and deal with injuries, just to kind of trade out of strengths into weaknesses where you actually have live bodies, because the free agent pool is so dire there. So I mean, in my case, like I kind of prefer the nine trading leagues, but the times where you do need to kind of even out your roster, like for example in labor right now, I've got three closers. I've got Josh Hader, Kenley Jansen, and Ryan Helsley, who I guess I'm counting as a closer. I'm doing really well in saves. Like I have that fortune or that ability to kind of trade out of that. And that's something I'll probably do over the All-Star break. So simple trades like that, I like, but we've all heard the stories, the league mates and that sort of thing with, you know, send me an offer. What do you, you know, I might possibly be interested in this guy. That largely for me is not worth my time.
Yeah. I don't know that I might've made one trade this year. A lot of people, especially now that I've started doing this, for whatever reason, they assume now, like, oh, I got some inside knowledge or whatever. It's like, no, we're not trading with you. It's like, I don't have any new supreme power that I didn't have last year. I may be paying a little bit more close attention this year, but you know, it's a bit of a crapshoot trade, especially yeah. early on in the season. It's a total crapshoot about who's going to end up having value or not. And we still have, you know, 2+ months of baseball, half a season left to go. So guys who have been shitty so far could turn it around, and vice versa, guys who might have overperformed might fall off a little bit here. Moving on, why don't we I'm gonna throw a name at you here, someone who I've been, like I said on Twitter, to response to a question, I will die on this hill, and that hill is Alex Cobb. Another rough outing yesterday. I mean, you look at the advanced stats, he's got a great ground ball rate, 62%, career low hard hit rate of 33. And the XFIP is still 2.96 compared to his 4.71 ERA. Are you with me here, thinking there's still hope for him, or have you cut ties?
Hard to find a pitcher, at least on the surface with luck factors, that has gotten the shaft more than Alex Cobb. So, like, I definitely get it. I mean, at HQ, we've got kind of our own metrics for things, a 3.16 ERA to that 4.71 surface ERA. Like, there's just – it's in the ground ball rate, like, and nobody, I mean, that's a Framber Valdezian ground ball rate for Alex Cobb. The only thing with Alex Cobb is just like with, and this is large, I mean, in a large part, like with the topic of regression and that sort of thing, it's just like, he needs to stay healthy and pitch long enough for those luck factors to kind of even out, for that BABIP, for that hit rate. Alex Cobb, I thought entering the season was great on a per inning basis. I just wasn't sure with the volume, how much you would get out of him. So yes, like on a per inning basis, I think nothing has changed with Alex Cobb. He's absolutely one of those kind of quote unquote buy lows. If you just look at the ERA and the surface whip, I just don't know. He's already got 63 innings under his belt. Only pitched 93 innings last year. Hasn't pitched over 100 since 2018. I just worry that time is running out from a volume standpoint for him to correct that stuff.
Yeah, volume-wise, I don't know that we're going to get it. Hopefully something clicks after the All-Star break here. Like you said, I think he's been the unluckiest pitcher in all of baseball. Like a 2-run difference between the XFIP and the ERA. Like you said, the ground ball rate, like everything should point to success. Strikeouts have gone down a little bit recently, but they were at an all-time high for him. I have no choice but to hold out hope. I still have a lot of shares for me. I'm still going to be holding on here for the time being anyway. I mean, it'll get to a point like with Trevor Rogers where I kind of have given up, but I'm not quite there yet with Cobb.
Thanks for that Trevor Rogers that PTSD there. I have had a lot of Trevor Rogers, and for some reason I keep watching him pitch, which is not good for not only just my team stats, but my own kind of sanity and psyche. I need to stop doing it. Did it again last night with a Pirates lineup that did not have Brian Reynolds or O'Neill Cruz. Had 7 Ks, but nothing else went well with that. So yeah, Trevor Rogers, big miss on my part.
Oh, I think everybody kind of missed that. And I don't think Jack Suwinski was in the lineup last night either. I think all the guys
have
kind of been producing for them. If there was an opportunity for him to turn it around, I mean, the worst lineup, arguably, well, maybe Oakland can contend for that worst lineup conversation, but right up there, bottom two, three lineup. If he wasn't going to turn it around there, I think I've cut ties where I do currently still roster him. Ah, man, like you said, it's tough. It's a little bit strenuous on the mental health to even mention him. I'm sorry I even brought him up. Why don't I throw it over to you? Who's another guy that you want to talk about today in terms of a second half turnaround?
I'll go to the outfield. I'll just throw a couple guys out here. Is Alex Verdugo for me is one who he's someone who you look at the surface stats, career low batting average, 6 home runs, just got his first steal, I believe, this week. But then you go one level deeper and just look at kind of the contact rate, the contact quality, the underlying power. Basically, everything with Alex Verdugo is pretty much at his career norms. I mean, even his strikeout rate is actually better than it's been in recent seasons. So Alex Verdugo is someone that's just that classic example of somebody who, from a pure skill standpoint, is the exact same guy that we thought he would be entering the season, which is not like, you know, not a stud, not a breakout guy, but someone who has modest, you know, five category, great batting average in that lineup, like good runs, good RBI, a few bombs, you know, not many steals. But this is the same exact guy. He is just that the BABIP has been at an all-time low, which is driving down that surface batting average. And really the raw power, even though he does only have those 6 home runs, that's a 7% homer to fly ball rate, which is one of the key metrics that I look at. Alex Verdugo, his personal baseline is more around that 13% level. So when I see the raw power skills more or less in line, but the homer to fly ball rate is down, I think that's going to tick up. And Alex Verdugo will be kind of the Verdugo we thought he'd be in the second half. Another guy who, same division, but we'll go Teoscar Hernandez, someone who I had a lot of early in draft season. I think just never got going. Had that home run on opening day. You're like, all right, it's Teoscar time. Gonna have a great year. 6 days later, had an oblique strain, was out for a while. You wonder like how, and that'll be kind of a common theme for me with some of these guys. And I mentioned it with Voit, is just like injury related issues dragging down first half numbers. And I think that's been the case with Teoscar. He had a great June, which kind of leads me to believe that he's starting to get past that oblique strain. But someone who I think is going to pick it up in the second half just has the track record. I think in larger case, Toronto lineup as a whole will pick it up as well. So Teoscar, someone who I'm not too worried about, I think will bounce back second half.
Yeah, just to touch on Verdugo real quick. I don't have any shares. I haven't watched so much of the Red Sox recently, but from what I've seen with the numbers, he has started to turn it around recently. He's batting 304 over the last month. He's got his lowest BABIP, like you said, only time in his career he's ever been below 300 for BABIP. So all signs point to having a better second half. That lineup is still pretty scary when you look at it in its entirety, Devers, Bogarts, and Martinez. They just named JD Martinez to the All-Star game today. So a lot of good stuff going on in that lineup. I agree with you there on a second half turnaround. There was one more outfielder that you had mentioned you wanted to bring up before, Randall Grichuk. You think better things are coming for Randall?
It's funny. I like when I do this, but I put out a tweet yesterday, like during the afternoon. I say yesterday on Monday, in the afternoon, just saying Randall Grichuk, like what a power outage. And as someone who in March got traded, like I've always been a big Grichuk guy, but never really had the playing time. You know, that everyday role. He gets traded to Coors in March. So not only from like a park factor standpoint, but also seemed to be an everyday guy. And then all of a sudden he's hitting 244 with 8 home runs through the first half of the season. It's like, where did that power go? And it's interesting. I put out a rolling graph on Twitter, and my tweet was fan graph. So, I mean, the big thing with Grichuk was just an uncharacteristic fly ball rate. Grichuk's always been able to elevate 42% career fly ball rate. That's down for some reason to 34% this season. But if you look a little bit deeper, it really started low. Like through his first 25 games, Grichuk had a fly ball rate under 25%, which is just crazy. That has upticked a lot over the last few weeks. And then there's been this issue with, and this is actually, you know, everyone kind of hates on Twitter, but I got a comment and I did not, this I totally missed, but I got a comment from a follower that linked to an article that Grichuk really has been going back and forth between contact lenses and glasses and that sort of thing, having vision problems throughout the first half of the season, wore glasses for a little bit, and then a couple weeks ago switched back to contacts, and at least says, hey, take that at face value, that he's a lot more comfortable with that now. So I just kind of take all those things together, the track record for Grichuk, the park, and then that recent kind of uptick in fly ball rate and hard hit rate with maybe him being able to see a little bit better. And I think things are looking very strong for Grichuk right now, especially given, and it's kind of funny with the tweet, like you can kind of take a temperature of what the market feels like on Grichuk. And I got a lot of, oh, I cut him a while ago, or, oh, you know, I only start him against lefties at home. Otherwise I drop him or whatever. So I think people are down on Randall Grichuk. I think this is a pretty good time to kind of jump back in.
Yeah, like you said, he's available. I play in a lot of Yahoo leagues, a lot of ESPN leagues where people have cut bait from him. Like you said, the vision thing could be a real thing. He's walking the lowest rate of his career at only 4.3%. The strikeouts are at the highest they've been in a few years. So that's something to definitely keep an eye on, not to make a shitty pun there. But
that was good. I like that one.
Definitely someone that you could probably buy low on or maybe even just pick up off the waiver wire for a little bit of a boost. I'm going to throw another name at you here. Tyler Molly, who is currently on the shelf, but I think it's not expected to be too serious. He'll be back. I don't think it'll be before the break, but soon after the break, hopefully before the trade deadline, where I'm really hoping that he gets out of Great American Small Park, as Bubba likes to refer to it as. He has the seventh worst left on base percentage in all of baseball, only 68.5%, which is something to consider for sure. His xFIP is 4.04. It's a little bit lower than his ERA. Nothing crazy, but like I said, I'm hoping, praying for a trade here. I have a lot of shares of Tyler Molly. And looking back to last year, his WAR, baseball reference WAR, was 5.1, Fangraphs 3.8. He had a very good season. We haven't really seen that this year. But I think overall we can expect a turnaround from Molly going forward. Do you think we can expect that regardless of trade scenario? Do you think he'll have a better second half?
I mean, a trade would obviously help. I mean, that's not groundbreaking. Tyler Molly not only pitches in a really bad ballpark for pitchers, but it does have pretty wide home road split. So that would absolutely help. I mean, the question is that shoulder strain, like how serious is it? And that honestly, that is a guessing game. It sounds like the Reds are saying it's minor. Of course, they're going to say it's minor. This is the guy that they're trying to push out there at the trade deadline and get maximum value for. So I pretty much take, I pretty much am not taking the Reds, what they're saying at face value, because they're not going to go out and say this is serious and that sort of thing. They're always going to paint that optimistic tone. So we'll see. I'd like to see at least one start of Tyler Molly before I really get excited. The interesting thing with Tyler Molly, and this happens a lot with like first half samples, is you can have a really bad April or really bad start to the season, and that stings for a while. So Tyler Molly's case, he had a 6.45 ERA in April through five starts. That takes a while for him to correct, and someone can actually improve in the subsequent months, subsequent starts, and you really don't see it. You look at that season long ERA and it's just not there. So like Molly's ERA by month, 6.45 in April, 4.88 in May, and then a 2.94 in June. And June had a 39-6 strikeout to walk rate. Like that's elite. So things are trending correctly for Tyler Molly, at least until the injury. We'll see how serious it is, but I like the in-season improvement. I think he's past that rough April. We'll see where he goes, if he goes, because that means if he gets traded, that means I guess the shoulder is probably okay. So someone who I definitely like for the second half.
Well, they'll say things publicly, but at the end of the day, to actually get a deal done, whatever team is acquiring him will give him a thorough once over and make sure there's no bullshit being thrown at them in terms of saying it's not serious. And then it's, God forbid, TJ or something like that. Not expecting anything like that, but that's worst case scenario. But something along those lines, they say he's fine and then he's out for the year or whatever. So I hope we kind of just have to take him at face value right now. Like you said, kind of have to be a little bit cautious, but I expect that he'll probably be okay. And regardless, like you said, I hope we get him out of Cincinnati. It's kind of similar to what happened, like you said, with the high ERA with Luis Castillo, his teammate last year. He was just so terrible the first couple months of the year. And he actually had a great second half. And if you look at the numbers, the ERA was close to four. It was looked like a decent year. But in reality, it was very tough to roster Luis Castillo the first half of last year, which is what we've seen this year from Tyler Mahle.
Yep, absolutely. And also thanks for that Luis Castillo reminder from last season. He burned me big time. I was hoping Trevor Rogers would be like this year's Castillo, but it's in terms of like in-season improvement, but it's not happening. One other guy, just while we're talking pitchers that I think, and I feel like I say this every year, I feel like this is 2016, 2017 again, is John Gray. And so kind of hear me out on this, but John Gray missed time early in the season with that knee injury. Everyone was all excited. Actually, the market wasn't too excited for him leaving Coors. I thought the price at ADP this draft season was pretty cheap. But John Gray, similar kind of thing with that in-season improvement, 7 ERA through his first two starts. Again, just kind of ramping up from that knee injury, 5 ERA in May. But you look at his last six starts, 44 strikeouts and 37 innings, which is fantastic, 2.45 ERA and 8 walks. So that's someone who not only is improving in season, but I think is past that knee injury that kind of dragged him down early. We're also seeing that in John Gray's velocity. So you look at the fastball velocity, that is up every single month as well. Fastball velo in April was 94.5, then 95.5, 96.2, and then in July in two starts, 96.6. So you look at that in-season improvement in results, skills, health, and velocity. Like, I think things are trending the right way for John Gray for the 680th time that I'll say that.
Yeah, and it's resulted in the highest strikeout rate that he's ever had, 26.5%. His ERA is just a tick over four, but the xFIP is at 3.37. So, and he's had a couple of rough outings. His last couple of starts, there was a good streak, I think four or five in a row of just absolute beauties. And then a couple of rougher ones here. So you have an opportunity to probably buy low. And depending on where you are, you might be able to pick him up off a waiver wire, depending on seriousness of your league. And he's, you know, like you said, getting away from Coors Field does wonders for pitchers. It obviously does the opposite typically for hitters leaving Coors Field. But a pitcher like John Gray, who I'm not going to say he has a track record, but he's got a career ERA of like, what is it, four or something?
He's got a career,
four.
Let's see.
4.54
in a 133 whip.
It's inflated by Coors. He is definitely better than that. There's no question. Question. His career xFIP 3.76. So he's definitely better than what we've seen from him for sure. There was one other pitcher you wanted to mention, I believe, Mr. Brandon Woodruff, who I am a big fan of. Of course, my shares have something to do with it. He's come back and he's looked like old Brandon Woodruff. No reason to think in my eyes that he's not going to continue what he's done so far coming off the IL.
Yeah, like, yep, absolutely. Like, so Woodruff just kind of got like the double whammy of just a bad first half. So on opening day, he got shelled. 7 earned runs in his first start at Chicago. You probably remember that well, Joe. Oh. If you have him on a bunch of your teams.
Oh, I do. I do. I had Brandon Woodruff and Jose Berríos, the double whammy on opening day. I remember.
Oh, it was lovely. And Berríos, well, yeah, Berríos hasn't gotten much better. But like with Woodruff, I mean, that's another thing too, is like that one, not even like a bad month, what I was talking about with Mahle, like even one bad start like that on opening day, like that's going to wreck your, that takes time to correct. And so Woodruff has pitched a lot better, of course, since then, but then had, you know, that kind of double whammy of injuries, had the ankle injury, then had this weird kind of hand thing in June. And so was starting to get a little bit concerned. But Woodruff, in three starts since he has been back from the hand injury, 27 strikeouts in three starts to three walks. I think he's absolutely a top 10 pitcher the rest of the season, potentially top five. This is the same Brandon Woodruff that we saw in 2020 and 2021. It's funny, like the industry and what you hear, everyone's kind of touting Brandon Woodruff. So I don't know how, you know, you're buying low or whatever, but if you are engaged in trade discussions, I would pay at least 95 cents on the dollar for his preseason value. Like, so there's different like levels of buying low, but like, I think you treat Brandon Woodruff as an absolute ace. And if you're looking for trades over the All-Star break, he should be valued as such.
Yeah, there are some people I know in my home league who just like to look at the season rankings. My home league's on Yahoo, and his rankings will be not great because of that 4.01 ERA, which doesn't tell you the whole story. There's different levels of fantasy players. So just for example, Brandon Woodruff right now on Yahoo is ranked as 158th player in standard 10 category, head-to-head league, 158. You can definitely get him at a cheaper cost than you would have had preseason or what you should even be getting right now. Career high strikeout rate this season, believe it or not, 31.9. Still has that great low walk rate. And of course, the XFIP, I love to look at XFIP, 2.98 compared to that north of 4 ERA. So a great candidate to buy. And like you said, there's different levels of buying low. I think you can buy low on guys without it being, you know, it doesn't have to be dirt cheap. Like Juan Soto is a guy I think you can buy low on. It doesn't necessarily have to be, it's not going to be dirt cheap, but it's going to be cheaper than it would have cost you in April when it would have been a first round player you would have had to send back. Now, it's probably going to cost you quite a pretty penny still, but same thing with Woodruff. It'll definitely be cheaper than it would have been at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, no, that's really well put, especially with the Soto example. I like that a lot.
There are, we've covered pretty much everybody, I think. Well, maybe one more guy who got shelled again last night. Well, two nights ago, you guys have been listening to this on Wednesday. Lance Lynn, 8 earned runs yesterday. Ooh. He's had a bit of a tough go of it, just putting it lightly. But when you dig in a little bit, that ERA, which is just south of 7, it's juxtaposed with the XFIP of 4.18. He's only leaving at 52% of runners on base. The BABIP against him has been 347, which is just brutal. And if we remember back to last year, Lance Lynn had a legitimate chance at being the Cy Young winner. I think that he could have won it if he stayed healthy down the stretch. His ERA was 2.69, great strikeout rate and everything. Last year, if he stayed healthy, he would have probably won the ERA crown in the American League and had a chance. So we have to remember that. He's still getting his feet wet this year, only a few starts in. Do you think that there's a good chance of a turnaround, or are you a little nervous about Lance Lynn?
A little nervous. So this is where I'll go in a little different direction. Now, admittedly, I've never really been a Lance Lynn, have missed out on that in previous seasons. The thing with Lynn is like a lot of that value was tied to volume. I mean, 208 innings in 2019, 84 innings in 2020, which of course short season, like that was a heck of a lot of innings. Yeah. And then only 160 last season, but a lot of that was front loaded, kind of went down. The thing that I'm concerned about with Lynn is just he's so fastball centric. I'm worried about the fastball velocity coming off the injury at this age. It's 93.5 miles an hour last season. That's down to 92.1 so far this season. And I mean, you could kind of spin that in terms of, okay, well, he's only made six. He still got that Zach Wheeler example where Wheeler earlier this season, you know, was delayed because of shoulder surgery. Everyone was freaking out his first few starts. Velocity was down, getting shelled. And he was, you know, obviously now he's Zach Wheeler. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball this season. That could be the case with Lance Lynn. I'm taking the more pessimistic view, though, just given the age. I don't know if that fastball velocity is going to bounce back. And for somebody who really relies on the fastball as much, I know he has different kind of shapes of fastballs and cutters, that sort of thing. I'm lower than most on Lance Lynn the rest of the way.
I understand what you're saying. I understand the worry, and I'm not totally sold with, we're not going to see what we saw last year, like a sub 3 ERA, I don't think. But I still think you can buy low, and if you get hurt, you get hurt. I know that might sound a little bit stupid, but there's still a lot of upside there. It is worrisome that he is down a little bit across the board in terms of velocity everywhere. And I'm not sure if he's actually doing anything different, but Fangraphs is classifying what was usually a slider for him as more of a cutter this year. I don't know if he's actually changed anything. It's about the same speed. Not sure if there's anything really there, if that's playing a factor, but I don't know. I still have some faith that we'll see a better version. I mean, definitely better than a 7 ERA down the stretch, I think. I mean, I pray anyway.
You hope. Would you be happy? I mean, would you be happy with like, and this is always a question, like, yeah, better than 7. Would you be happy if he had like a 4 ERA with a league average whip? Or are you hoping, are you expecting something better?
If that's what he ends up giving you, then that's arguably just streamable. You might as well just be streaming the spot in, and sometimes you'll get a better option and sometimes you'll get a worse option. I don't know that I'd be happy about that. I'd be happier, but still not thrilled. I think if that was the case, if we could see into the future and that was what he's going to give you, a 4 ERA and like a 1.3 whip or something like that, I'd probably say it'd be better to just stream that spot in, try and get some two-start guys and you know, shuffle the deck that way. I don't think people are ready to cut bait. I think some people are starting to drop him a little bit, but I'd probably hold on a little bit anyway, see if the All-Star break fixes anything.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just for what it's worth, with at Baseball HQ, we have our own projection system, and we've got Lance Lynn projected for a 3.53 ERA the rest of the season, 78 Ks, 74 innings. So yeah,
that would be great if he could give you that. I mean, cut the ERA right in half. That'd be fantastic. I don't want to keep you for too much longer here, but we will try and get to some of your questions that you guys put out on Twitter. Really appreciate you guys interacting with the show. Bring over some of the Twitter people onto the pod side. That would be fantastic. Hopefully convert a few of you Twitter followers into pod listeners. That is the goal long-term here. So we'll start with Jack. Jack asks if there's any concerns about Logan Gilbert potentially wearing down in the second half. When I was looking into his numbers, I saw something that shocked me. The most hard hit balls given up, according to StatCast, a hard hit ball, 95 miles an hour plus, for those of you who are unfamiliar, he has given up the most in the entire major leagues this season, tied with Patrick Corbin. That is an awful name to be tied with. He has given up the most hard hit balls, he and Patrick Corbin. Obviously a terrible name to be tied with. That's something that, I mean, it's concerning. It's unfortunate that he's paired with a guy who's known as the guy who you play against in DFS and stream against and whatnot. Something else that is a little bit concerning for me with Gilbert, his ERA through May 6th was 1.36. Through June 14th, it was up to 2.22, and now it's up to 2.80. The xFIP is at 3.80, so I'm not worried, but I think we've definitely seen the best version of him that we're going to see this year already. He's not going to get better than what we saw in May and June.
I agree with that. I think we're looking more at like a 3.50 ERA guy the rest of the way. I think that's more, though, because of not really him wearing down, which is kind of that original question. Yeah. More just kind of the results going back closer to his actual true skill level. In terms of like Logan Gilbert wearing down, I'm not all that concerned. He's got 106 innings already, which is actually quite a bit for starters this season, but had 125 in 2021. And then like 135 in 2019, who knows what he did in 2020. So with these types of questions, I like to kind of just look back and combine the minor league innings pitch with majors and just kind of see where he's been at. So he's been kind of like a 135 inning guy. And then with Seattle in the race, like, I mean, you would expect that to kind of bump up a little bit to maybe like 160, 170. I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that with Logan Gilbert. The other thing that I look at with these kind of innings and second half breakdown questions is not only how long did like Logan Gilbert last season, but how are the skills in the second half? And last season in the second half, his fastball velocity was actually up a half mile an hour and more or less had the same skills in the second half than the first half. So kind of the short of it is, I don't think Logan Gilbert will break down. I don't think he will get shut down as long as Seattle stays in the race. And they've been a damn fun team to watch lately. That Blue Jays series this past weekend was just awesome. But I do think he's more of like a 3.50 ERA guy once the results kind of catch up to his true skill level.
It might have been awesome for you down here in Toronto. It was like have a drink and go to bed kind of weekend. It was a tough watch, man. Carlos Santana just absolutely had his
Yeah,
way.
And I am admittedly, so I am in Oregon. I'm up in the Pacific Northwest. So I do have a little bit of a Mariners tilt, a little Mariners bias. But so I thought it was a pretty fun weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned on Bench with Bubba on Bubba and the Bloom that you were thinking about going up there for a game, right?
Thinking about it, I've got a three-year-old, just couldn't get away this weekend, and I'm already regretting it because we were also talking about that kind of rivalry between Blue Jay fans and Seattle fans. It's a really raucous atmosphere when the Blue Jays come to Seattle. The Canadians invade T-Mobile, and it was a great watch on TV, but unfortunately didn't bring the kid up with me go myself.
A lot of people make the way over the border from Vancouver. People come from your neck of the woods. Yep. And, you know, every hit, it's as if it's a home team at bat, because there's tons of cheering. You hear Blue Jays chants, then you hear Mariners chants. It's a lot. It was a lot of fun, even just to watch on TV. Well, not so much fun in the end result, but anyway, just trying to stay along with the vibe of the crowd. I think they were really well attended games, which I'm not sure about their attendance this year, but it's definitely one of their more attended series. Let's keep it going here with another pitcher question. Jack asked if it's time to sell Mackenzie Gore. I'm a little worried about Mackenzie Gore, but I'll leave this one up to you. What do you think about Mackenzie?
Yeah, you don't want to react too much over like one outing, and that may be kind of the root questions with Mackenzie Gore. His last outing was just a total disaster, 8 runs in 3 1/3 innings against San Francisco. The larger issue that I have with Mackenzie Gore is the walk rate is ticking up as we go. You look at the month long ERA, 176 in April, then 169 in May, and then boom, 727 ERA in June, 9 ERA in July. Obviously, a lot of that was that last start. And the skills are not looking good either. The fastball velocity is down. And this is somebody with Mackenzie Gore who does not have that track record of pitching deep into major league seasons. Obviously, this is his first year, but he's just had so many problems, well documented, just development issues and that sort of thing coming up in the minors. I'm concerned. You've got, I mean, in Mackenzie Gore's last 5 starts, he's got a 6 earned run start in there, an 8 earned run start at Coors, and then that other 8 earned run start against San Francisco. So I'm afraid that the sell high window on Gore may have been shut in June. If I have Mackenzie Gore and I'm not trading him, I'm probably benching him right now. See if that velocity comes back, see how he looks in his next start before you decide what to do there.
Yeah, I sent out a tweet, I guess it would have been on Sunday, talking about how I started Shane Baz and Mackenzie Gore in the same head-to-head league, completely ruined my whip and ERA for the week. And almost every single comment, there was like 15, 17 comments, almost all of them were saying, yeah, at midnight, Gore is getting dropped, no question, I'm done with him. I'm not quite there yet, but definitely worrying. And one thing that does worry me is they do not lack for starting depth out in San Diego. I don't think they'll worry about going down to 5 starters, because they have like 7 viable starters. They have Darvish, they have Musgrove, Clevenger, Snell's looked better his last couple times. Mm-hmm. Sean Manaea just had a good Coors start, which is always nice. Even Nick Martinez has done well for them starting in out of the pen. So they don't lack for starting pitching depth. I don't think they'll worry if Gore is shit in the bed to put him out in the bullpen, or even possibly maybe even send him down, depending on how bad it gets.
Agreed.
Let's move on here. Got offered Martin Perez for Alex Wood. Yes or no? I would definitely take Alex Wood in that trade. It would be like a buy low, sell high kind of thing for me. Martin Perez has had a couple of bad starts in a row here. And Wood, for me, is a guy who can turn it around. You and I were both big on him going into the year. So I'll take the Wood side in that trade. What about you? Would you prefer Wood over Martinez?
I'll lean Martin Perez over Wood. I just Alex Wood scares me. I mean, similar to the Alex Cobb thing, like the durability. You know, someone who, yes, I buy low on a per inning basis, but someone who I don't know if will pitch enough with Alex Wood to kind of realize those full benefits. So I'll go Martin Perez. Like, yes, similar to what we were saying earlier with other pitchers, with Logan Gilbert, we have seen the best of Martin Perez, but I still think he can be certainly fine with the ground ball rate of over 50%, which is excellent. You combine that with a 6% walk rate. Like, I love guys that don't walk people and keep don't have the sexiest walk rate in the world to be plenty effective from an ERA. A run pitching standpoint and from wins, and Perez pitches deep into games as well. So that combination, I just think Perez is the safer of the two. I think Alex Wood is more of the kind of boomer bust. So I'll lean safer with Perez.
The thing for me with Perez is that this season is just such an outlier as a whole. I just worry
it is.
Down the stretch, it's just going to all fall apart. I mean, he's had such a great changeup. He's been able to locate it so well this season. Last couple of starts haven't been as great. I defer to you because you've been at this a lot longer than I have, but I think you could probably just about flip a coin, but I would probably lean Alex Wood, just partly because I love San Francisco and what they do with their pitching. I love the organization.
Yep. I would say if I knew that they had the same or at least like a similar number of innings pitched the rest of the way, I would go Wood. I don't know. Maybe it's a mental block thing or something with Wood that he just seems to get hurt all the time. So
yeah, I agree. The Alex is out in San Francisco, can't catch
a break. And maybe, yes, maybe like Alex Cobbs, and I'm getting old. Like I get people mixed up all the time. Maybe it's maybe the Alex Cobb risk is leaking into Alex Wood for me. Like that could absolutely be the case.
Well, they've been similarly unlucky pretty much this whole season.
That's yep. Similar profile, similar name, same team.
Yeah. Just got one last question here. It is from Tony. He wants us to rank in a points league here, so we'll just do this pretty quickly. Vinny P, Rowdy, Connor Joe, Mitch Haniger, and Matt Carpenter. It's kind of hard in a vacuum. I'm assuming this is going to be like just standard scoring. I had them ranked out Rowdy, Carpenter, Vinny, Haniger, and Joe, and that's really a lot dependent on if Haniger comes back and is healthy, because we saw what he could do last year. If he comes back and he's healthy, I think Haniger would be at the top of the list. I'm just a little bit skeptical after missing so much time. Out of those guys, I think I'll take Rowdy Tellez just because I think he's the most consistent home run producer there. But you can't really go wrong with Matt Carpenter right now either, the way he's been swinging the bat.
Yeah, it's tough, honestly. And he was the hardest ranked for me out of this group is Matt Carpenter, because there is a scenario where guys get hurt, whatever. Matt Carpenter falls into pretty regular playing time as a left-handed hitter at Yankee Stadium. And I mean, we've seen in the last couple of weeks, like what that could be. There's this other case where Anthony Rizzo's back. The Yankees are healthy and Matt Carpenter just kind of goes back to being a utility guy, in which case he would be the lowest for me on this list. So I'll kind of put Carpenter in the middle there. I will also Tellez first overall. He's been a bloom boards, which is my kind of preseason shtick. Tellez has been a bloom boards darling all season, with like just the combination of contact strikeout rate with hard contact with the barrel rate, and that has come to fruition. I'll go Tellez first. I'll go Vinny P second. I will go then Carpenter, Connor Joe, and then Haniger. I hate to see it. Like, I feel bad for him, just all the injuries that he's had, the nature of some of these injuries. But until he can prove that he can stay healthy, I'll kind of be low on him.
Yeah, I mean, last year, I still remember last year, he actually killed me in head-to-head a lot of times last year. I wasn't big on him going into the season, and then he had like 40 home runs, 100 RBIs. He was fantastic. He won't be that good this year, obviously, but I still have hope, a little bit of hope anyway, that post All-Star break we can get some Mitch Haniger anyway. And you cheering for Seattle, I'm sure you guys are hoping for another outfielder. Not that you guys are lacking for outfield depth, but
no, but it would be a hell of a boost, especially if it's anything like the 2021 Mitch Haniger. Like from a Seattle perspective, take your time, Mitch. Like, yeah. Don't rush it back. Come back, and I guess the ETA is like end of July ish. If that bled in later to August, to make sure he's healthy, I much prefer that. Just like you said, given the outfield situation in Seattle.
Yeah, no need to rush him back here. Thank you for coming on again, Ryan, man. I really appreciate you doing this. We ran a bit longer than I anticipated. I hope I didn't keep you from doing anything. It's just really, really great chatting with you again.
Just day job stuff. Fantasy is far more important. I kind of say that tongue in cheek, but I also don't. So a lot of fun for you. This has been a blast, Joe. Hopefully our second half predictions go a little bit better than our pre-opening day ones. But yeah, again, appreciate the invite back, and great to see you ascending in the community here, putting good content out there in terms of some Twitter threads and recaps, as well as the show as well. So
I really appreciate that. I'm trying to carve out my little corner of this world that I'm realizing more and more every day. There's so many people in this world who write for Baseball HQ and Pitcher List and Fantasy Pros and Fantrax and everywhere. And every day I'm seeing new writers I didn't know existed, and new podcasts. So it's great to be a part of this, a small part of this great community. And you have been fantastic coming on, chatting me up. Really, really, honestly, thank you for all you've done. Not to get too deep into it, but you've been really great with me, and you've been great with this show early in our infancy. We couldn't have done it without guys like you coming onto the pod.
For sure, man. That's what it's all about, is I don't want to say I've made it or whatever, but like I one of the things I really like to do now that I've been in, been doing this for so long is just kind of bringing other people up. And you're definitely one of those guys. So
I appreciate that, man. Yeah. 10 plus years, right? 10 plus years at Baseball HQ now.
This is my 10th. So it's a sign of me getting old, forgetting players, getting them mixed up, but I still love it as much as I did on day one. So
that's great to hear. For you guys who aren't already following Ryan, you guys can hit him up on Twitter at RyanBHQ. He writes for Baseball HQ. I think a lot of his stuff is for subscribers, but he also puts out some Bloom boards and whatnot on Twitter, give you guys a little bit of a taste. So go ahead, check him out there on Twitter and, of course, at BaseballHQ.com. We'll get you on again at some point, maybe one time before the season or maybe when the season ends. And we'll talk and see maybe how we did in our preseason predictions and how we did today. Guys, I really appreciate all you tuning in. Like, subscribe, download, do all that good stuff. And we'll see you again tomorrow. Cheers, everybody.